All right, so let's jump into a deep dive into some pretty important stuff for your SCE exam.
Okay, sounds good.
Esophageal cancer.
Right.
We're going to be unpacking the latest ESMO clinical practice guidelines,
All right.
which, as you know, are key for the exam.
Yeah.
And we've got excerpts from the actual guideline document itself.
Okay.
And then also like a summary document that highlights the major points.
Perfect.
So our goal here is to really make sure that you walk away with the most important
Yeah.
exam-relevant information,
Yeah.
all presented in a nice, clear, and concise way.
Excellent. I like it.
So to kind of kick things off,
Okay.
the source material highlights that esophageal cancer is the seventh most common cancer globally
Wow.
and the sixth leading cause of cancer-related deaths.
Oh, wow.
Over 600,000 new cases and over 540,000 deaths reported in 2020 alone.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people.
Those are some pretty sobering statistics.
Yes, they are.
Now, while squamous cell carcinoma, or SCC, is the predominant subtype, worldwide, we're seeing a pretty notable rise in adenocarcinoma, or AC,
Okay.
particularly in Western nations.
Interesting.
And it's thought that factors like rising obesity rates and shifts in dietary habits might be contributing to this trend.
That makes sense.
So as gastroenterologists, we need to be prepared to kind of encounter both subtypes in our practice.
For sure.
So that's definitely something to keep in mind, especially for the SCE exam.
Okay, great.
Now let's talk about risk factors.
Right.
So beyond the well-known ones like smoking, alcohol, and obesity,
Right.
what else do the guidelines kind of emphasize?
Well, for SCC, the guidelines highlight the significance of nutritional deficiencies.
Okay.
Specifically, deficiencies in zinc and selenium have been implicated.
Interesting.
Additionally, conditions like palmoplantar keratoderma,
Okay.
which is a rare genetic skin disorder, and a possible link to HPV infection are also mentioned as potential risk factors.
Okay.
It's really quite fascinating how these kind of less obvious factors
Yeah.
can play a role.
Absolutely.
And for AC, I noticed that the guidelines point to medications that relax the lower esophageal sphincter,
Okay.
such as nitrates, anticholinergics, and even beta agonists.
Interesting.
As gastroenterologists, we prescribe these medications frequently,
Right.
so recognizing their potential link to AC is really crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, taking a thorough patient history, including medication use,
Yes.
is paramount for accurate risk assessment.
Totally agree.
And this detailed history taking is something that the SCE exam often emphasizes.
For sure.
Now, moving on to diagnosis,
All right.
the guidelines are very clear. Endoscopy is just the starting point.
Right.
They emphasize a really comprehensive, multi-pronged approach.
Okay.
So, what are some of the key investigations they highlight,
Sure.
and what are the exam-relevant points for each?
Well, during endoscopy, they stress the importance of obtaining at least six biopsies.
Okay.
Adequate tissue is really vital for both histopathology and potential molecular analysis. Differentiating between SCC and AC accurately is essential,
Wow.
and sometimes IHC staining might be necessary,
Okay.
especially in poorly differentiated tumors.
So it's all about just really getting enough tissue
Yeah.
for accurate diagnosis.
Exactly.
What about other imaging modalities? What role do they play in the diagnostic workup?
Well, endoscopic ultrasound, or EUS,
Okay.
is another critical tool highlighted in the guidelines.
Okay.
It's particularly useful for accurate T and N staging, especially for T1 tumors,
Okay.
where determining the depth of invasion can be challenging.
So you're saying that as a gastroenterologist, you need to be comfortable with not just endoscopy,
Yes.
but also interpreting findings from various other imaging modalities.
Precisely.
It sounds like the SCE exam might test this ability to integrate information from different sources
Right.
to make informed decisions.
Exactly.
Now let's talk about the TNM staging system.
Okay.
The eighth edition of the AJCC-UICC system is the one to know for the exam.
Yes, absolutely.
And one thing that the guidelines emphasize
Yeah.
is that the T stage definitions can be quite nuanced.
Right.
For instance, within the T1A category,
Okay.
there are subcategories M1, M2, and M3, which correspond to increasing depths of invasion.
Okay.
This distinction is critical
Right.
because it directly impacts the appropriate management approach,
Yeah.
whether endoscopic resection alone is sufficient
Okay.
or if a more radical intervention is required.
So even within the early stages,
Yeah.
there are these subtle but crucial distinctions that can significantly alter the treatment course.
Exactly.
It sounds like the SCE exam might present cases where understanding these nuances is essential
Absolutely.
for making the correct management decision.
And the guidelines highlight similar nuances for the T1B stage,
right,
with its SM1, SM2, and SM3 substages.
Exactly.
Again, the depth of submucosal invasion plays a key role in determining whether endoscopic resection is appropriate,
yes,
or if surgery is warranted.
That's right.
The guidelines really stress the importance of mastering these specific T stage definitions.
For sure.
All right, so accurate staging is paramount.
Absolutely.
Now let's move on to treatment.
Okay.
The guidelines emphasize a personalized approach, right?
Absolutely.
Treatment for esophageal cancer is not one size fits all.
Right.
The guidelines highlight the importance of considering various factors.
Yeah.
Histology, stage, tumor location, and the patient's overall performance status.
Okay.
When making treatment decisions.
It's about tailoring the approach to each individual patient's needs and circumstances.
Exactly.
So let's break down the treatment approaches based on the stage.
Okay.
What's the preferred approach for early stage disease?
All right.
Specifically T1N0M0.
For early stage disease, endoscopic resection is typically the preferred approach.
Okay.
The guidelines detail the two main techniques.
Mm-hmm.
EMR, or endoscopic mucosal resection, mm-hmm, for smaller lesions.
Okay.
And ESD, or endoscopic submucosal dissection, for larger or more challenging lesions. The choice between EMR and ESD depends on factors like the size and location of the tumor.
Okay, so for early stage disease,
yeah,
it's often possible to avoid more invasive procedures.
Exactly.
Now, what about locally advanced disease?
Okay.
Those in stages T2 to T4 with nodal involvement but no distant metastasis.
For locally advanced resectable disease,
okay,
surgery often takes center stage.
Okay.
The gold standard remains a radical transthoracic esophagectomy.
All right.
However, the guidelines also highlight the increasing use of minimally invasive approaches, or MIO.
Okay.
MIO offers the potential for comparable oncologic outcomes with reduced morbidity,
right,
and faster recovery.
That makes sense.
So it's crucial to be familiar with both the traditional surgical approach,
yes,
and the evolving role of MIO.
Oh, okay, great.
Now, what about cases where surgery isn't an option?
Right.
What do the guidelines recommend for locally advanced disease in those situations?
In cases where surgery is not feasible or the patient declines surgery, the guidelines recommend definitive chemoradiation.
Cool.
This involves higher doses of radiation combined with chemotherapy, aiming to achieve complete tumor eradication without surgery.
All right, so there are valid options even when surgery isn't feasible.
Yes.
Now, let's tackle the most challenging scenario.
Okay.
Advanced or metastatic disease.
Right.
What are the standard treatment options in this setting?
For advanced or metastatic disease,
okay,
systemic chemotherapy remains the cornerstone of treatment. The guidelines recommend a platinum fluoropyrimidine doublet as the standard first-line regimen.
Okay.
However, the landscape is evolving, and we're seeing the increasing integration of immunotherapy.
Yes. The checkpoint inhibitors,
right,
nivolumab and pembrolizumab,
exactly,
are creating a lot of buzz in oncology.
Yes.
Including in esophageal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What's their role in this setting, and what are the key things to know for the SCE exam?
These checkpoint inhibitors,
okay,
particularly when combined with standard chemotherapy, have shown promising results in improving overall survival for patients with advanced disease.
Okay.
Remember that PD-L1 expression plays a crucial role in selecting appropriate candidates,
right,
for these therapies.
Mm-hmm.
The KEYNOTE-590 trial,
what,
which evaluated pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy,
yeah,
demonstrated significant benefits,
okay,
especially in patients with high PD-L1 expression.
Okay.
This trial has been practice changing.
Wow.
And the combination is now widely adopted.
Okay.
Similarly, the CheckMate 648 trial demonstrated the efficacy of nivolumab,
that,
another checkpoint inhibitor, in combination with chemotherapy for advanced SCC.
All right, so you're saying that immunotherapy is rapidly becoming an integral part of the treatment landscape.
Absolutely.
But it's crucial to understand the specific indications, the supporting evidence from key trials,
yeah,
and the importance of PD-L1 testing.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've covered diagnosis, staging, and a range of treatment approaches.
That's right.
But before we move on, is there anything else the guidelines emphasize regarding treatment decision-making that we should highlight?
One thing they stress is the importance of a multidisciplinary approach.
Okay.
These decisions are rarely made in isolation, involving, yeah, surgeons, oncologists, radiation oncologists, and other specialists, ensures that each patient receives comprehensive and individualized care tailored to their specific needs and circumstances.
Okay.
The guidelines advocate for a collaborative approach to treatment planning.
That's an important point.
Yes.
It's not just about knowing the guidelines,
right,
but also understanding how to apply them in a multidisciplinary setting.
Exactly.
This collaborative approach is something the SCE exam might also emphasize.
Absolutely.
Now let's shift gears to post-treatment care.
Okay.
It's not just about surveillance, is it?
No, it's much more than that.
Okay.
The guidelines highlight the importance of long-term management of potential complications.
Okay.
And addressing the overall well-being of esophageal cancer survivors. It's about ensuring that we're not just treating the disease,
yeah,
but also helping patients regain their quality of life after treatment.
So what are the key aspects of this comprehensive post-treatment care?
Sure.
What should gastroenterologists focus on?
The guidelines emphasize a structured follow-up strategy,
okay,
typically involving endoscopy and CT scans every 3 months after chemo, radiation, or surgery.
Mm-hmm.
This allows for early detection of any recurrence,
okay,
which is critical for timely intervention.
Right.
While esophageal cancer and its treatment can significantly impact a patient's nutritional status,
mm-hmm,
so addressing nutritional deficiencies is crucial.
Okay.
This might involve dietary modifications, nutritional counseling, or even enteral or parenteral feeding in some cases.
Okay.
Beyond nutrition, the guidelines highlight the importance of psychosocial support,
okay,
and rehabilitation.
Gotcha.
These aspects help patients cope with the emotional and physical challenges of their cancer journey,
right,
and facilitate their return to a fulfilling life.
It sounds like the guidelines advocate for a holistic approach to post-treatment care.
Yes.
Recognizing that surviving cancer is about more than just being disease-free.
Exactly.
It's about regaining quality of life and addressing the physical and emotional needs of each individual.
Precisely.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
From risk factors and diagnosis to various treatment approaches.
Right.
And the importance of long-term care.
Yeah.
Now, to really solidify your understanding,
mm-hmm,
and prepare you for those SCE exam scenarios.
Okay.
Let's delve into some case examples.
Sounds great.
Are you ready to put this knowledge into practice?
Absolutely. Let's see how these guidelines translate into real-world clinical scenarios.
All right. So here's our first case.
Okay.
A 65-year-old male with a 30-pack year smoking history and moderate alcohol consumption.
All right.
Presents with progressive dysphagia.
Okay.
Particularly to solids,
mm-hmm,
over the past 3 months.
Okay.
Based on this presentation, what initial investigations would you order?
Well, this presentation certainly raises a red flag for esophageal cancer,
right,
given his risk factors and symptoms.
Yeah.
The first step would be an upper GI endoscopy with biopsy.
Okay.
It's crucial to obtain at least 6 biopsies to ensure adequate tissue for diagnosis and staging.
Okay.
Along with the endoscopy.
Yeah.
A CT scan of the thorax and abdomen is essential for initial staging.
Okay.
Primarily to rule out any distant metastases.
Those are definitely the standard initial steps.
Yeah.
Endoscopy for visualization and biopsy,
right,
and CT scanning for staging.
Exactly.
Now, let's say the biopsy reveals squamous cell carcinoma.
Okay.
And the patient is deemed fit for surgery.
Okay.
What treatment options would you discuss with him?
In this scenario,
okay,
with a likely diagnosis of locally advanced SCC,
mm-hmm,
the treatment discussion would center around 2 main pathways.
Okay.
The first option is neoadjuvant chemoradiation followed by surgery.
Okay.
The landmark cross trial demonstrated a significant survival benefit with this approach, making it a standard of care in many centers.
Okay.
The second option,
yeah,
particularly for patients who might not be suitable for or decline surgery,
right,
is definitive chemo radiation.
Okay.
This involves higher doses of radiation delivered concurrently with chemotherapy, aiming for complete tumor eradication without surgery.
So there are 2 evidence-based options,
yes,
each with its own set of considerations.
Right.
What factors would you discuss with the patient to help him make an informed decision?
Well, we would discuss the potential benefits and risks of each approach.
Okay.
With neoadjuvant chemoradiation followed by surgery.
Yeah.
We would highlight the potential for improved survival,
mm-hmm,
but also discuss the potential side effects of both chemoradiation and surgery.
Okay.
The impact on quality of life.
Right.
And the extended treatment duration for definitive chemoradiation.
Yeah.
We would emphasize that while it avoids surgery,
mm,
the radiation doses are higher.
Yeah.
And there might be long-term consequences to consider.
Mm.
Right. Ultimately, the decision is a shared one.
Yeah.
Made in collaboration with the patient after a thorough discussion of the available options.
That's a great example of how the guidelines inform our practice.
Yes.
But don't dictate rigid protocols.
That's right.
It's about applying the knowledge in a patient-centered way.
Exactly.
Considering individual preferences and circumstances.
Absolutely.
Now let's move on to our second case.
Okay.
A 55-year-old woman with long-standing GERD and documented Barrett's esophagus presents with worsening heartburn and occasional dysphagia.
All right.
During endoscopy,
yeah,
you identify a suspicious area within the Barrett's segment and take biopsies.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on this case so far?
The clinical picture here points toward a possible adenocarcinoma arising from the Barrett's esophagus.
Okay.
Those biopsies will be crucial for confirming the diagnosis and determining the stage.
Right.
Again, at least 6 biopsies are recommended to ensure we have sufficient tissue for accurate assessment.
Let's say the biopsy confirms adenocarcinoma.
Okay.
And EUS reveals it's a T1B-SM2 tumor with no nodal involvement.
All right.
What would be the most appropriate management in this scenario?
Okay, so we're dealing with a T1B tumor that has invaded into the middle third of the submucosa.
Okay.
This is where those T-stage subcategories become really important.
Right.
According to the guidelines for T1B SM2 tumors, radical surgery is generally recommended to ensure complete tumor removal and minimize the risk of recurrence.
So in this case, you'd likely recommend an esophagectomy.
Absolutely.
And would you discuss the potential benefits of a minimally invasive approach with the patient?
We would explain the rationale for surgery and discuss the various surgical approaches, including the potential advantages of MIO.
Right.
We would also address any concerns the patient might have and ensure they understand the potential risks and benefits of each option.
Okay.
Again, it's about shared decision making and tailoring the approach to the individual patient.
These cases illustrate how the ESMO guidelines help us navigate complex scenarios.
Yes.
But they are just the beginning.
That's right.
We'll delve into more cases in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
To further solidify your understanding.
Great.
But for now, take a moment to reflect on these cases and how the guidelines apply in practice.
And don't hesitate to revisit the source materials if you need to refresh your memory on specific points.
Absolutely.
The more familiar you are with the guidelines,
the
more confident you'll feel tackling those SCE exam questions.
That's a great point.
Good luck.
Thank you. Welcome back. Let's continue our deep dive into the ESMO clinical practice guidelines for esophageal cancer.
Right.
It's really amazing how much progress has been made in treatment.
It is.
Especially with minimally invasive surgical techniques and immunotherapy.
Yes.
These are game changers for our patients.
Absolutely. Minimally invasive esophagectomy, or MIO, has revolutionized the surgical approach, offering comparable oncological outcomes to open surgery, but with significantly reduced morbidity, patients recover faster and experience a better quality of life.
That's a huge win for our patients.
For sure.
But I'm curious, what's the evidence behind MIO?
Okay.
Is it robust enough to confidently recommend it to patients and discuss it on the SCE exam?
Well, the evidence supporting MIO is quite compelling.
Okay.
Several randomized controlled trials, like the ones by Bier et al., Mariette et al., and Van der Sluis et al., have demonstrated the advantages of MIO in terms of postoperative recovery, quality of life, and reduced complications.
So it's not just a trend.
Right.
It's backed by solid data.
Exactly.
Speaking of exciting advancements, we can't forget about immunotherapy.
Oh, for sure.
Checkpoint inhibitors.
Yes.
Particularly those targeting PD-1 and PD-L1 have truly transformed the treatment landscape for advanced esophageal cancer.
Indeed, the integration of checkpoint inhibitors has been a major breakthrough. When combined with standard chemotherapy, these agents have shown impressive results in improving overall survival. For instance, the KEYNOTE-590 trial, which we touched upon earlier, evaluated pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy and demonstrated a significant survival benefit in patients with both SCC and AC, especially those with high PD-L1 expression.
Okay.
This trial was practice-changing and has led to the widespread adoption of this combination therapy.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
So are all checkpoint inhibitors created equal? Are there other key trials or specific nuances we should be aware of for the SCE exam?
Well, not all checkpoint inhibitors are the same.
Okay.
While pembrolizumab has shown impressive results, nivolumab, another checkpoint inhibitor, has also demonstrated efficacy.
Okay.
The CheckMate 648 trial specifically investigated nivolumab in combination with chemotherapy for advanced SCC and showed a survival benefit, especially in patients with a TPS of at least 1%. This trial also explored the combination of nivolumab with ipilimumab,
right,
a CTLA-4 inhibitor, mm-hmm, which also showed promise.
Right.
So for the SCE exam, it's important to be familiar with both pembrolizumab and nivolumab,
okay,
their respective indications, mm-hmm, and the key trials that support their use.
It sounds like a deep understanding of these trials is key for the exam.
It is.
The nuances of which checkpoint inhibitor is used for which type of cancer and in what context could easily be tested.
Absolutely.
So we've talked about the excitement surrounding MIO and checkpoint inhibitors.
Right.
But are there any instances where these approaches might not be suitable?
Of course, it's important to remember that not every patient is a candidate for immunotherapy or surgery.
Right.
Patient selection is paramount.
Okay.
A thorough understanding of the guidelines, the evidence behind each treatment approach, mm-hmm, and individual patient factors is essential for making appropriate recommendations.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not about applying these treatments indiscriminately, but rather using them judiciously.
Yes.
Based on the specific clinical scenario.
Exactly.
So when is endoscopic resection the preferred approach?
Okay.
We talked about it briefly before.
Right.
But could you elaborate on when EMR or ESD would be the best choice?
Sure. Endoscopic resection is generally preferred for early stage disease.
Okay.
Particularly T1A tumors that are confined to the mucosa. Sure. However, even within this early stage,
yeah,
the depth of invasion within that T1A category,
okay,
those M1, M2, and M3 substages, mm, can significantly influence the decision between EMR and ESD.
Okay.
For instance, if the tumor is T1A M1, meaning it's minimally invasive into the lamina propria,
okay,
EMR is usually sufficient.
Okay.
But if it's T1A M3 extending deeper into the lamina propria,
right,
ESD might be necessary to ensure complete removal.
So even within the early stages, those seemingly small distinctions in invasion depth can have a big impact on the choice of endoscopic technique.
Yes, they can.
I imagine the SCE exam could present cases where we need to carefully analyze the staging information,
mm-hmm,
to determine the most appropriate endoscopic approach.
Yeah.
What about T1B tumors?
Okay.
How do they factor into the decision-making process?
For T1B tumors, hmm, those that invade into the submucosa,
okay,
the guidelines generally recommend radical surgery,
right,
to ensure complete removal and minimize the risk of recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
This is because endoscopic resection alone might not be sufficient to achieve clear margins in these cases.
Right.
The depth of submucosal invasion, represented by those SM1, SM2, and 7M3 substages,
yeah,
also plays a role in surgical planning.
Okay.
For example, a T1B SM1 tumor minimally invading into the submucosa,
okay,
might be amenable to a less expensive resection,
mm-hmm,
while a T1B SM3 tumor extending deeper into the submucosa might require a more radical approach.
It seems like those T-stage subclassifications are crucial details that can't be overlooked.
They are.
They hold a lot of weight when determining the right treatment course.
Absolutely.
Now, we've discussed situations where surgery might be the preferred option.
Right.
But what about locally advanced resectable disease, where surgery is either not feasible or the patient prefers an alternative approach?
In those cases, as we mentioned before,
yeah,
definitive chemoradiation becomes a key consideration.
Okay.
This approach involves delivering higher doses of radiation concurrently with chemotherapy, hmm, aiming to achieve complete tumor eradication without surgery.
Okay.
It's a crucial treatment modality to be familiar with.
Yeah.
And the SCE exam might present cases where you need to weigh the pros and cons of definitive chemoradiation versus surgery.
It sounds like there's a lot to consider when making treatment decisions for locally advanced disease.
Yes, there is.
Are there specific aspects of definitive chemoradiation that we should be prepared to discuss with patients?
Yeah.
Or that might come up on the SCE exam?
Absolutely.
Okay.
When discussing definitive chemoradiation with patients, mm, it's essential to emphasize the importance of close surveillance after treatment. While we aim for complete tumor eradication,
right,
there's always a possibility of residual disease or recurrence.
Okay.
Regular follow-up endoscopies and imaging studies are crucial for early detection and management of any issues.
So even when choosing a non-surgical approach,
yes,
we need to emphasize the need for ongoing monitoring,
uh-huh,
and the potential for further intervention if needed.
Right.
It's about setting realistic expectations,
yeah,
and outlining a comprehensive long-term management plan.
Exactly.
Now, shifting back to surveillance.
Okay.
We've touched upon its importance throughout our discussion.
Yeah.
Could you provide more specific recommendations from the guidelines?
Sure.
Regarding post-treatment monitoring.
The guidelines are quite clear regarding surveillance after curative treatment,
okay,
whether it's surgery or definitive chemo radiation.
Mm-hmm.
The standard recommendation is endoscopy and CT scans every 3 months for the first 2 years,
okay,
followed by less frequent monitoring thereafter. This schedule is based on the understanding that the risk of recurrence is highest in the first 2 years after treatment.
Right.
And regular surveillance allows for early detection and intervention,
mm-hmm,
potentially improving long-term outcomes.
Early detection is key in oncology.
It is.
And these regular checkups provide that opportunity to intervene promptly if necessary.
Exactly.
But as we've discussed,
yeah,
post-treatment care extends beyond just watching for recurrence.
Right.
What other aspects of patient well-being do the guidelines emphasize?
You're right. It's not just about monitoring for disease.
Right.
It's about restoring quality of life.
Right.
Esophageal cancer and its treatment can have a significant impact on a patient's nutritional status.
Yeah.
So addressing nutritional deficiencies is paramount.
Okay.
This might involve dietary modifications, nutritional counseling,
mm-hmm,
or even enteral or parenteral feeding in some cases.
Okay.
The guidelines also stress the importance of psychosocial support. Recognizing that a cancer diagnosis and treatment can take a toll on emotional well-being.
Yeah.
Providing resources and support systems can help patients cope with anxiety, depression, and other challenges.
It's really about recognizing that post-treatment care involves a multifaceted approach.
Yes.
That addresses not just the physical,
right,
but also the emotional and social needs of our patients.
For sure.
And it's great that the ESMO guidelines acknowledge and emphasize these broader aspects of care.
Absolutely. The guidelines advocate for a holistic approach to patient care,
mm,
recognizing that surviving cancer is about more than just being disease-free.
Yeah.
It's about regaining quality of life and achieving a sense of well-being.
Now, to reinforce all the key points we've covered so far,
okay,
let's dive back into those case scenarios.
All right.
You're going to tackle a few more.
Bring them on. I'm ready to put our knowledge to the test and see how we can apply these guidelines in various clinical situations.
All right. We're back for the final part of our deep dive into esophageal cancer, focusing on those ESMO clinical practice guidelines.
Okay.
We've covered a ton of ground already, diagnosis, staging, treatment, follow-up.
Right.
It's been a whirlwind of essential knowledge for your upcoming SCE exam.
It has.
But now let's shift gears a bit.
Okay.
And explore the frontiers of esophageal cancer research.
All right.
This is where things get really fascinating, seeing how the field is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
And pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
I agree.
So what's on the research radar that has you particularly intrigued?
One area that's generating a lot of buzz is personalized medicine.
Okay.
We're moving beyond the one-size-fits-all approach.
Right.
And really starting to unlock the unique molecular secrets within each tumor.
That sounds incredibly promising.
It is.
It's like tailoring treatment to the specific blueprint of the cancer, rather than just relying on broader classifications.
Imagine having a roadmap for each patient's cancer journey, guiding us toward therapies that are most likely to be effective based on the tumor's individual characteristics.
Yeah.
And this is where next-generation sequencing, or NGS, is playing a pivotal role.
Okay.
NGS allows us to analyze the entire genome of a tumor,
mm-hmm,
identifying specific genetic mutations or biomarkers that can predict how a patient might respond to certain treatments.
So instead of just classifying a tumor as, say, adenocarcinoma,
right,
we can pinpoint the precise genetic drivers fueling its growth.
Yeah.
And then select therapies that target those specific pathways.
Precisely. It's about moving towards more targeted and effective therapies.
Okay.
Minimizing unnecessary side effects and maximizing the chances of success.
Mm-hmm.
And this personalized medicine approach dovetails perfectly with another exciting area of research, immunotherapy.
Yes, those checkpoint inhibitors we discussed earlier are already making a significant impact in treating advanced esophageal cancer.
Uh-huh.
But I imagine the research in this area is far from over.
You're absolutely right. The current research is focused on exploring new immunotherapy combinations,
right,
to further enhance the immune system's ability to fight cancer.
Oh.
For instance, combining PD-1 inhibitors with CTLA-4 inhibitors or other novel immunotherapies holds immense promise.
Mm.
These combination approaches aim to unleash the full potential of the immune system to target and destroy cancer cells more effectively.
It's like we're giving the immune system a boost.
Yeah.
And refining its strategy to attack cancer cells with greater precision.
That's a great analogy.
And beyond, new drug combinations.
Yeah.
Researchers are also diligently working on refining patient selection for immunotherapy.
Right.
We know that PD-L1 expression, while useful, isn't a perfect predictor of who will benefit from checkpoint inhibitors.
That's true.
So the search is on for more reliable biomarkers.
Yes.
That can paint a clearer picture of a tumor's immune profile and predict which patients are most likely to respond to immunotherapy.
Exactly. Researchers are investigating factors like tumor mutational burden or TMB, microsatellite instability or MSI, and other genetic signatures that might help us better select patients for immunotherapy.
It's remarkable how research is constantly refining our understanding of cancer.
It is.
And leading to more personalized and targeted therapy.
Right.
And while the SCE exam primarily focuses on current established guidelines, I imagine having a grasp of these emerging concepts demonstrates a deeper understanding of the evolving landscape of esophageal cancer management.
Absolutely.
It shows that you're not just memorizing guidelines, but actively engaging with the future of the field.
And who knows?
Right.
Maybe some of these emerging concepts will start appearing in future SCE exams as they become more integrated into clinical practice.
It's definitely a field that's constantly moving forward.
It is.
Now, before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with something to ponder.
Okay.
A thought-provoking question that builds on everything we've discussed today.
I like that idea.
Here's a question to consider.
All right.
With all these exciting advances in personalized medicine, immunotherapy, and surgical techniques, what do you envision as the future of esophageal cancer care?
Okay.
How will these innovations change the way we diagnose, treat, and support our patients in the years to come?
That's a great question to reflect on.
It encourages us to think beyond what we know today and envision a future where esophageal cancer, like so many other cancers, can become a more manageable and hopefully curable disease.
I agree.
It's a future worth striving for.
Well, I think we've covered everything we set out to do in this deep dive.
Yeah.
We unpacked those ESMO clinical practice guidelines for esophageal cancer, dissected complex case scenarios, and even explored the exciting frontiers of research in the field.
It's been a comprehensive and insightful journey through a challenging topic.
It has.
And all our listeners out there prepping for the SCE exam,
yes,
remember that knowledge is power.
It is.
And you're well on your way to mastering this crucial area.
And remember, never stop diving deep into the ever-evolving world of gastroenterology.
Absolutely.
It's a fascinating and rewarding field to be a part of.
Couldn't agree more. Until next time.
Mm.